ultimately, the secret to success in any endeavor, but certainly at the leadership level, is you have to promote others. And I think the idea that while I might be the leader, I fundamentally figured out many years ago that I really work for everybody else. And, you know, that's an important truth.
Hello and welcome to our Winnovations webinar turn podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kyle A. Richards, and we have a fantastic program planned for today. Now, regrettably, this is the final program of our first season, but we are going to end with a bang here today. Now, the purpose of these podcasts is to highlight the exciting and innovative work being done here at the University of Wisconsin in the Department of Urology. We also want to generate discussion within the broader urology community so that we can continue to work together to make innovative advancements in urologic care. We are planning future podcasts for season two with a new lineup of exciting guests, so stay tuned for these releases. More to come in the fall. Also, we are continuing with our urology joke of the month that we rolled out, so stay tuned for that. That will be at the end of the program. It's important to maintain a good sense of humor, especially nowadays. But without further ado, I would like to introduce our guest for today, Dr. Steven Nakata. Now, Dr. Nakata has called Wisconsin his home since 1995 when he joined the faculty and quickly ascended to division chief in 2001. He was then named the inaugural chair of the Department of Urology in 2008, successfully shepherding in the new era of urology at UW-Madison, growing the department to 22 clinical faculty. I believe my count is correct, Steve. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Might be 23, but it depends when you count it. So,
right. It's a moving target these days as we continue to grow. In addition to his service as department chair, he serves as chief administrative physician for UW Medical Foundation Practice Plan, and recently began his term as president-elect of the American Urologic Association. On a personal note, Dr. Nakata has really been a great mentor for me and an amazing leader in our department and beyond our department. He's very passionate about the topic for today, which is next-gen leadership, the future starts now. So thanks for being here, Steve, and welcome to the program.
Yes. Well, Kyle, great job on Winnovations. I've enjoyed all of the episodes immensely, and I'm certainly honored to get a chance to be on the show.
Yeah, thanks. And we're really glad to have you as our leader in the department and to be gracious enough to be one of our esteemed guests. So just starting off the discussion, Steve, if you could tell us basically, how did you come to develop a passion for physician leadership? How did this passion of yours arise?
Yeah, so I'd make a case, you know, the first question is how did I become division chief? And I think the short answer there is others recognized that I might have the capacity to do this. And I'll admit, in 2001, I didn't really understand what it took to be a great leader or a leader, period. And, you know, I learned quickly, you know, physician leadership you're not born as a leader. You have to cultivate those skills. But more importantly, historically, we've always had a mismatch in terms of the requirements to get you to become a chairman or to get you to become a leader don't necessarily prepare you to be a leader. So as a simple example, people of my era in urology who became chairman were usually the folks who were clinically very effective, had strong academic credentials, grant funding, you know, thought leaders in the field. Yet once you became a chairman or a leader, those are primarily individual type properties, identifying ways for yourself or your program to succeed, and not really understanding how to make a group strong and successful. So my interest quickly shifted to some extent out of necessity, but to other extent, because I think it's been the most rewarding part of my career, is to begin to cultivate and mentor other young and old urologists to become leaders in the field or even simply more satisfied with their careers and to be productive within and outside the department.
Yeah, and it's clear to me that it's a passion of yours, being in a leader in the department and around the country and in the urology world. And your last point, I think, dovetailed nicely into sort of the next question I wanted to ask, which is, how do you approach physician leadership development within the department here at the University of Wisconsin? What's your strategy? How do you approach that with your faculty, you know, some younger, obviously, but also mid or later in their careers?
Yeah, I think the first step any good leader takes is sort of learning your team and learning your people. And that can be a long process. Every person you work with, I think, effectively has a couple areas to consider. One is, are they interested in leadership? And then two, is it a strong suit potentially for them? And then number three, what is it going to take to get that person to where they want to go? So the first step, I think, is really learning your people. And that requires listening, which is, I think, an undervalued skill. You know, I think what happens is top people in the field become very good speakers, right? Because that sort of is what gets you there. If you're an inspiring speaker, you know, even an engagement of this nature, you know, being able to tell a story. But ultimately, I think to get it right, you have to be able to listen. And maybe more adeptly, you have to be able to hear. So I've spent a lot of time strategizing on how I would best do this. And as you know, as a risen star, really, through the department, that when you first join the staff, I meet with the assistant professors once a month for just 15 minutes. And what I learned there is it's an opportunity for me to hear what you're trying to do. But I think ultimately the goal there is to learn as much as I can about you so that I can direct you properly. So job one, I think, is to definitely learn your people. Then the other key points are, you know, you have to be a good role model. And I think that becomes a significant piece of good leadership, to behave in a professional, communicative, succinct manner. And then probably most importantly, again, if we're talking about undervalued skills, the undervalued skill, I think, there is consistency. There's a lot of power in somebody who gives a consistent, clear message. It doesn't even have to necessarily be popular all the time, but just consistent values. So I think the people around you can understand you. So I'm trying to learn about our people, but then also I want our team to just at least understand what my core values are. And in that way, we can all have sort of open dialogue, which I think is very, very important. And then the third piece is the commitment to it, you know, the commitment to leadership. And I think the biggest commitment any leader makes is his or her time. And so, you know, the idea that I will mentor people is not a simple matter. And I think it requires an effort both on my part and on the faculty's part. So it's an honest process, and leadership's not for everybody. There are people that want to be leaders that can't, or maybe don't have the skill set for it, but that in our department, that number is probably zero. But I think there are folks who could be great leaders but just don't want to. And it's taken me years, but I've accepted that that's just maybe the right thing. Because, you know, it's hard to succeed at something if you don't have a passion for it. So anyway, those are my fundamentals on it, at least to get us started.
No, that's great. I'm hearing a lot about, you know, that you have to be committed to leadership. You are great at being a good role model, which, you know, other leaders in the department can watch you and emulate what you do, which is fantastic. You know, you give your time and you listen, and that is invaluable, especially for the junior faculty as they're sort of trying to figure things out as they get started. You also said early on that not everyone is born a leader, and that it's something that can be developed. So if leadership is a passion for somebody, Steve, in your opinion, how does the next generation of physician leaders gain the skills that they need to really become transformative leaders?
I think there are multiple things to look at here. The first, there are formal courses that you could take. There are opportunities you could take. And I think that we're all leaders. It's just a matter of who you're leading. And I think the recognition of that and then the ability to learn from that experience is very, very important. And I'd make the case the minute you get your MD and you're an intern, you're leading people. You're leading the staff that are taking care of patients. And so this is a critical skill regardless. You use the term transformative, and that's a big word. And I think very few people get to that stage, myself included. What I see in the next generation is much, much more open communication, which is something I've tried to adapt to, and sort of a different core value system in that I think there's a lot more focus on sort of individual feelings and individual passion. Whereas when I was coming up, it was more, well, this is what we're doing. How do you fit in? And I think ultimately at the end of the day, probably, you know, the modern approach is better, because I think what happens is more people get more opportunities and more people are open to new ideas, which wasn't the case when I was rising through the ranks. And I think we're in a good position to have a more innovative society in medicine than we've ever had. So, you know, that's a big plus.
Yeah, I like the innovation plug there. We are on Winnovations, so
of course,
appreciate that. Excellent. Now, in your sense, you know, having mentored many new physicians, Steve, do you get the sense that newly minted physicians are interested in leading the charge? Because I know it's, at least in my opinion, it's critical to have physician leaders around medical centers and not have them be supplanted by, you know, non-physician leaders. So do we have enough zest for leadership within newly minted physicians to carry that torch around medical centers, or is that not a possibility? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think short answer is I don't know, but I'm guessing we do. You know, having worked with many physician and non-physician leaders, I can tell you some of the best leaders I know are not physicians, right? And some of the worst leaders I know might be physicians. So I think that's overrated a little bit. Now, obviously, if you're a physician and you're leading a healthcare organization, there are certain truths that you understand that corporate leaders don't. So that's a clear benefit. But what's most important is sort of the assessment of both the passion and the ability early in a career. And I think what happens, at least with us, is even in our resident selection, and certainly at faculty level selection, we sort of self-select or identify people who, number one, are excellent communicators, number two, who have clear goals, and three, who are team players. And that's, you know, to me, that's the central thing that we're looking for. And finally, as you well know, we want great educators. So at some level, we're selecting when we hire faculty for great leaders and or people that are interested in leading. And I think it behooves us to get people on the right path. And, you know, there are many theories that we could spend hours on, but one that I think holds a lot of value is the concept of the ship of leaders. And ultimately, you know, the best unit has almost everyone leading some aspect of the department or program, or leading some aspect of the ship, whether it's the navigation or it's the cooking or it's the cleaning or it's, you know, the preparation for battle station. I mean, it's a ship of leaders. You know, we try to do that in our department, but I know all great departments try to do that. And more importantly, great organizations do this. I think at the end of the day, you know, this idea of voting on an issue really doesn't exist in a top level organization. It's usually today a matter of consensus, right? We have moved towards, I believe, a consensus decision-making process in the department. You know, rarely do we decide something 14 to 9. We just don't do that. So that's how I view it. And at every level, our staff, I think, view that they have a say and view that they can communicate a position or, you know, and this to some degree gets into lean management where anyone along the line can stop the conveyor belt. But the problem I have with lean is we're not really, you know, building cars. Our mission's different than that. And it's really more about what individuals can contribute.
You mentioned building consensus. So how do you go about building consensus if there's disagreements among certain members of your team? You know, what's your strategy in building consensus?
Yeah, that's always a tough one. My goal is to try to get each side to see the other's position. You know, that's probably top of the list. And moving from there, the thing that saves you the most time when it comes to a major or a disagreement in strategy is to accept that there might be a third strategy that we might have to go to. And either way, today we're comfortable having sort of a discussion as opposed to never really grappling with concerns or problems. And at the end of the day, this is the value of the diverse workforce. Diversity has many forms, but there are just many aspects of a situation, decision, or initiative that may not be obvious to some of us that are glaring to others. And that's a very powerful position to be in from our standpoint. So I'd make the case, while diversity's hard, you know, we've focused on it and it is paying dividends today.
Yeah, definitely. So you talked quite a bit about communication earlier on. I wanted to sort of get a little bit of a follow-up question in, because how leaders communicate can be so critical to the team's success. So how do you go about creating a culture of open communication where colleagues can feel safe to not just praise one another, but also offer critique, constructive criticism, said in another way?
Yeah, so short answer is if I really knew how to do that, you know, I would be on national television, because I don't think that's an easy thing to do. On the other hand, I do think it is important, number one, that people can feel comfortable speaking up. And the best way to do that is to sort of eliminate or mitigate any concept of potential retaliation. So I think it's all about retaliation and how you're viewed. And I think what happens is senior people are much more comfortable being more open, you know, because they're senior people and they've been around. But ultimately, you could make the case the best feedback often comes from the junior people who bring a fresh perspective. And, you know, at least from where I sit, I always just keep asking the question, how can we be doing this better? And what critique do you have of how I do my work and so on? And as you may or may not know, when the chiefs graduate, the last week they're here, I talk to them individually and I ask them to critique my style and my leadership just to get their feedback. And at that point, they're pretty free to say what they want to say. So I've gotten some useful advice, no doubt. But I think it all starts at the top. If you're willing to take feedback. And I think the bigger thing is you have to sort of, if you're going to ask for feedback, you have to be ready to act on it, right? Nobody wants to take a survey if they know nothing's going to change. So I think by the same token, have we made adjustments based on feedback? And the short answer is, at least from where I sit, yes, we definitely listen and make change. A good example of that is something you're very involved with, which is the residency program. The one thing we know with the residency program is it's in flux at all times. It's always fluid because we're trying to match up to what's best for our trainees. And that's based on direct feedback. So you have to listen and you have to be willing to act. And, you know, obviously retaliation, I don't think anyone actively attempts you know, retaliatory behavior. It's more the fear of it, I think, that affects the culture. But it's hard. Culture is very hard to manage. And it's a very hard thing to contain.
No, thanks for the candid answer. I know that's I'm asking the hard questions today, Steve, not the softball. So thank you for that. I want to switch gears a little bit. I know you're a fan of famous quotes. So I thought I would read you some quotes on leadership I came across. And maybe you can let me know if you know who said it, and then just comment on the quote with maybe your own opinions. How does that sound?
Sure. No, of course. Of course. Fair enough.
All right. So the first one is there are two kinds of people, those who do the work and those who take the credit. Try to be in the first group. There's less competition there.
Terrific. Fantastic. Yeah.
Do you know who said that?
So that was Indira Gandhi. And yeah, 100%.
Correct. So she was the first female prime minister of India. So good call. What do you think of the quote?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I think ultimately the secret to success in any endeavor, but certainly at the leadership level, is you have to promote others. And I think the idea that while I might be the leader, I fundamentally figured out many years ago that I really work for everybody else. And, you know, that's an important truth.
Good. All right. The next one is you do not lead by hitting people over the head. That's assault, not leadership.
Not sure who that is. Sounds like someone from the military.
Yeah. So Dwight Eisenhower, who was president of the United States from 1953 and 1961. And yeah, for the listeners, you know, some of the younger listeners out there. But yes, he was a military man. So you do not lead by hitting people over the head. That's assault, not leadership. What do you think of that one?
You know, to me, if you have to hit people over the head to get them to do something, you know, you're probably not doing your job right. It's very reasonable to set expectations, but it's another thing to demand things that are complex. Of note, though, when we talked about consensus and those strategies, you know, military hierarchy is different. So it's a good quote in that it's good that it's from the military, but it's an excellent quote because a military man is saying that. So
good. Well, thanks for your comments on that one. The next one is effective leadership is not about making speeches or being liked. Leadership is defined by your ability to influence others.
Right. So that's a great quote. I've heard it. I don't know who said it, but it's absolutely right. And I think I spoke to this because giving speeches and being liked, that kind of gets you to leadership, unfortunately, in our business, at least historically. But at the end of the day, your ability to influence others is the key, no doubt.
Yeah, no, you did speak to that earlier on about how, you know, how many people become leaders at the beginning. That was a quote from a woman named Dr. Barbara Kellerman. She's a scholar, speaker, one of America's most prominent women in foreign policy, and has been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations since 1986.
Great. Yeah. She's probably got some other good ones, is my guess.
Yes. Yes, indeed. This next one is, I like this next one. You will never lead well if you're not committed to developing your leadership skills.
Okay, another great quote. Again, don't know, but leadership in most people's careers, particularly doctors, since I'm a doctor, it's all about your skill sets. My style is a certain style, but I've tried to evolve it over time. But evolving your skills is important because the world around you is evolving. The faculty of today were the residents of yesterday, and their value system's totally different. Part of leadership is influencing those folks. And one of my favorite statements that any resident has ever said to me is, as one of our chief residents said, that I was a good example of the proper use of Twitter, which is completely a social media item that obviously I never heard of until 2012. But that's sort of a way to communicate, at least with many people of different generation.
Yeah, that's good feedback. the other part of the quote that stood out to me was the part on committing to the developing leadership skills. And you mentioned earlier about commitment, and many leaders, I think that can be one of the pitfalls is not being fully committed to not just developing their skills, but to whatever they're leading in general. The last quote was from Ralph Nader. For the young folks out there, he's been a leader in the consumer protection movement for over 45 years. He's a lawyer, author, lecturer. I think he ran for president at one point in time. I've got one more for you, Steve. In most cases, being a good boss means hiring talented people and then getting out of their way.
Okay, so that's FDR.
Yep, bingo.
And that's right. We talked about it early. I mean, we self-select all the time. You know, and it's my job and all of our jobs is to let people go. The only caveat there is you need people that are willing, able, and interested in doing this. And that's where the beginning part of it is important to me. So hearing, seeing, and observing, well, seeing and observing the same, but that early part is key. And you know, both you and Sandra are great members of the department. And at some point, I was watching very closely what both of you are doing. And today I'm not. So I think that's a high state if you can achieve it. And I think what happens is your top, you know, my sort of realism caveat is that works very, very well for your top people and fairly well for the majority of your people. But there are then some people that doesn't work for.
Thanks, Steve. Well, we're running near the end of the program. Any last minute bits of advice on leadership that are pearls of wisdom that you wanted to impart on our listeners for today?
Yeah. I mean, I think first want to thank you and Sandra for putting together a great Winnovations series. Again, enjoyed all of the speakers. A lot of great information, a lot of entertaining and easy sort of listening and learning. So thank you very much for that and congratulations. I would say, what would I have liked to have known, you know, when I started? And probably it's the last thing I said. The best part of the biggest successes have been, at least for me, enjoying the process. And the process of getting us from A to B and B to C and D to E, is actually in many ways the best part, and sharing the passions and the efforts to get us where we've gone to and recruit the people we've recruited and face the challenges we're facing. That's been, I think, a real, for me, part of the enjoyment. And I think that's why I still do it, because I value how we undertake a problem and begin to solve it, as opposed to viewing it as, oh, this is another problem I have to solve, right? Those are two different things. But I don't have the quote at the top of my tongue, but I think it's really how you perceive your job is almost more important than how you do it, right? I would just say enjoy the process, because it's easy to let it go by. And it's sort of like having kids. I mean, we have kids and there's some tough times, but at the end of the day, those are the best times.
Yeah, that's well said. Well said. I wanted to just end by telling a story to set the scene for our listeners out there that don't know me as well. I do have a habit of wearing scrubs most of the time at work, and largely, you know, somewhat comfort related, but also efficiency related, as I, you know, going back and forth between clinic and the OR, spend a lot of time in the operating room. So as Dr. Nakata mentioned, he does a lot of active mentoring of junior faculty. And I was earlier on in my career, I was sitting in one of my one-on-one meetings with Steve. And he said, you know, Kyle, it sure would be nice if you put a tie on once in a while. I don't know if Steve remembers telling me that, but to which I replied, I like wearing pajamas to work. And then Steve answered, you can't wear pajamas to work every day. And then I said, why not? Everyone else does. And to which Steve quipped, that's because they're the patients, Kyle. So hope you enjoyed the story. Hope you enjoyed our episode. And it's really been a pleasure having this chat with you, Steve.
Thank you, Kyle. The pleasure's been mine.
Thank you so much for all you've done for not just my career, but the career of many of our faculty and many folks around the country as one of our leaders in the field of urology. I want to also thank Sandra Miller, our producer and editor of these podcasts. And we look forward to launching our second season in the fall and more to come on that. And I hope you all have a great rest of your day. Take care.
Winnovations is a production from the Department of Urology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Thanks for listening.